Hi.
Hi.
We're here again.
This is Devin.
And Chris.
And we're here to do Yoga for the Body Politic, personal practices for ethical action in a shared world.
And this time we're talking about self-care.
Yeah.
So our question this time is, what's a time you did self-care this week?
Or what's a time when you noticed that maybe some self-care was needed or could have been helpful?
Mm-hmm. What did it look like? What was your self-care?
Yeah. Okay, you go first.
Okay. Well, on Saturday night, today is Friday, Devin and I, along with a few others, had a meeting of Yoga for the Body Politic Live.
Mm-hmm. So almost a week ago.
Yes. There were five of us there. That sort of was a way for us to start having conversations around this and sort of piece things together. If you're interested in that, you can contact us. Our information is on the KBOO website. Anyway,
it's like a very intimate hang where we talk about these ideas.
Yes. At the meeting, we were all checking in. How did we feel? And I had been like having these really beautiful feelings that I'm trying not to cling to, but finding that I am about like openness and tenderness, and they were so lovely. They felt so good in my body to have those feelings. And then at the meeting, everything was like done. So after that, I was like,
our meeting sounds super good, right, you guys?
it was the meeting was like a catalyst for that. It was already in process. And it was because I had to like show up and be vulnerable in a way that I was not sure if I was ready to be. And then my body was like, you're not quite ready to be. So the process of noticing that was a process of self-care. And I noticed it even as I was driving to the meeting that I had this like sort of tingly energy, and I was like, where is this coming from? What's going on? Why is this happening? I thought I was nervous, maybe, because it felt like nervous, but then it turned out later that it wasn't nervous. When I got home and did my zazen, which is a way
you
of
sit
self-care.
Before you go to sleep too?
Yeah. But only for like 5 minutes.
You're so good.
I don't have things that make it difficult. It's easy for me to do it. Anyway, so I got home and I did my zazen. That's a major form of self-care for me, is the zazen. And my feeling was, I've been going through, I'll put it this way, recovery from an injury, although that's not entirely accurate.
Okay. Healing.
Healing.
Is
sort of. A big physical bodily transformation.
Yes.
And because of that, I've had lots of people from all over my life suggesting, here's a thing you could do with your body. Some of them are people I really love and trust, and some of them are people who I don't get along with but have to trust because they're the ones who know things I need to know. It was getting really hard for me to hear what my body was saying about what my body wanted, because all of these voices were just in my head, like, here's the thing to do with your body. And my body wasn't a part of the conversation. So the closing down was a, you need to listen to your body for a while. So that's what my self-care was like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Listening.
Mm-hmm. And noticing.
And noticing, right? It's so that moment. I feel so seen by myself in the very moment when I'm like, oh, I want to hide.
Yes, it feels like hiding to me too.
And even before the whole part that's like, why do I want to hide? What has been going on? Just in the moment when I'm like, oh, it feels like that. It's like the moment when my kids are like, they finally just got my attention. And like whatever's going to happen after that, where they explain to me what's going on with them, or they throw a fit, or we do something nice together or whatever, is like so secondary to the moment where like my attention turns to them all the way. And they're like, now I don't have to worry that it isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry. I don't have to keep fighting to get your attention. I can stop fighting to get your attention, which means I get to notice myself in the, like, in your gaze. Because before that, they're, like, working so hard on me, on getting me to turn toward them, that they're shoving away, to an extent, how they feel just to try to get there.
Yes.
And I use this, the more conversations we have, the more people will see, notice. Like, I'm sure everyone in my yoga world and my life have noticed. I think of the way that I treat myself very much in line with, like, a kind of parenting. I am all the time relating to myself through layers of attachment and attachment philosophy and the experience of being someone who can do caregiving and the experience of being someone who needs caregiving and all the different ages that I am on a psychological level and how those present and like who is the adult in the room. And by that, I mean me most of the time, who really needs to listen or give attention. That's what I hear when you are saying your body. Yeah. You know, that language that we use, that I use a lot, that's like my body. And at the same time, you and I are both people who are like, it's body mind.
Yeah.
You know, there's no body versus me. There's not even any ownership of the body. But we can use the body really often to indicate a self that is less intellectual and more vulnerable and also way more connected to the earth and way more connected to intuition and to safety.
And immediacy.
And immediacy.
Like bodies don't make plans in the same way.
In the moment, right? Yeah. And so getting that moment of like, I need to listen to the self, the version of my layered self that is getting messages about my wellness and my self-trust and is sending messages about that moment by moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was your self-care like?
I mean, I guess I had a similar experience in the sense of that Saturday before the Body Politic meeting.
Like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Saturday is like my one day off in the course of a week. It was like sunny. And no, not the Saturday before, the Saturday of the Body Politic meeting. Uh-huh. So same day as your day, but hours before.
Yeah.
I knew that I needed to get the pea seeds into my garden. It was the right day to do it. I was able to make a limit with my kids. And I think of that as a loving limit. Mm-hmm. That's like, it's not really with them, it's really with me.
Yeah.
That I say to myself, you really want to do this. And if you let them prevent you from doing this, you are going to be a bitter person. That will not benefit anyone. But because it's hard for me to say no to them, especially over and over and over and over and over again, when they are asking for all kinds of other things from me, I have to be really committed to loving myself by saying no a lot and by voicing in a non-blaming way that I've made a choice and that I need to commit to doing that and carrying out my choice. And so I got to spend several hours in my garden. It was hugely, hugely nurturing for me to focus on one thing and have my hands in the dirt and give myself that kind of parenting, the parenting of like, I'm actually not going to let you indulge in the habitual behavior of putting your kids' care before your own. I had a similar sense of like noticing myself and noticing myself as an animal and a sad animal on the earth.
Yeah.
Then that gave me the opportunity to not be the most grown up provider of care because I was getting all this care from just touching the earth.
Yeah.
And being reminded of the fact that all the care that I get comes from the earth, that I'm always inside this mothering as a mother, you know, and as a person who does a lot of what I think of as mothering for other women in my life and for students that I work with and for adults that I teach. And that's like a fine line for me. The right kind of mothering and the wrong kind of mothering. And that's part of what we want to get into today. That in the last podcast, we talked about how only we can tell what shuts us down and what opens us up.
Yep.
And care works the same way.
Right.
It let me really notice that I had been actively not receiving care.
Yeah.
So that was nice because that's, right? That's like when you feel like you're out of breath and then you're just existing in a field of all of the air that you need.
Yep. Yeah, we had a nice parallel process.
Yeah.
So when we talk about self-care, the things that Devin and I described, again, might not sound like the way that we often use that word. So self-care is a lot of different things, obviously.
And one of the things we really want to address here is this binary that shows up so often in like the capitalist cultural milieu around what self-care is, right? And that binary is so strong in capitalism, in patriarchy, like politically, between self and other.
Right?
If I'm caring for someone else, I'm not caring for myself.
Right.
Is so often that story, right? So self-care looks like...
Often it looks like selfishness.
Right. Yeah, that's the media 17 magazine self-care.
Like you're going to buy these fancy bath
salts, get your nails done.
Or get your nails done.
Totally. Me time.
Have a nice meal.
Take a bath.
Take a bath.
Which like, hell yeah, take a bath. But
listen to music. Get a fancy candle.
Yeah, you got to have a candle.
You got to have
while like, you're getting your nails
six
done,
candles
right?
or something. Drink some wine. That's
chocolate.
One. Chocolate. Yeah. Have you seen those bottles of like chocolate and wine mixed together?
Ew! With a candle on it.
It's a self-care package.
It has bath salts.
Yeah. Which, as we're talking about it, this is all about buying stuff, right?
Right.
Which
yeah.
like
it's
fits
all
into
purchasing.
This dichotomy.
Like get yourself one of those journals that they have in Powell's, like in the whole giant journal section where it's like there's lots of prompts and then you fill out the journal.
Yes.
I am totally cool if you love doing that. That can be self-care, right?
Right.
This is our thing, right? It's like Pema says, only you know what opens you up, what shuts you down.
Right. And that sort of stuff isn't inherently worse than like digging in your garden and going for a walk in nature.
Totally. Or doing zazen. Aren't we so holy that we meditate instead of like smelling candles?
Right. I mean, we have incense.
I don't use incense at my house.
I don't either. But that's like part of the package.
It's allowed. That's allowed. That's like the better kind.
But like those things, what I'm trying to say is there's not like hierarchies of better or worse self-care in the way that it looks externally.
Exactly.
Because going for a walk can shut you down or keep you from having access to what's going on with you just as much as going to your favorite store and buying shoes.
And it's not helpful at all for it to be like, yoga is good for everyone.
Right.
Or hiking is good for everyone. Right. That's a hierarchy, just like the hierarchies that we're laughing about.
Right.
Which is like, the more money you spend on yourself, the more care you're giving yourself. Right.
Right. And both of those can be opening and connecting and allow you to turn and look at yourself. Mm-hmm. And they can also be like, well, I did my hike today, so I guess I won't be stressed anymore.
Right, which is just like a blinding.
I did my, like you said, when I said, oh, I did my Zazen at night, and you're like, oh, aren't you good?
Right. Yeah, and you're like, I'm just trying to stay alive.
I'm just being a human
that
doesn't have
basic functioning stuff here.
A dog that licks my face and kids that need my help. And my life is different than yours.
Right, and also when I say, oh my God, you're so good, what I mean is that sounds so nice to me and I'm jealous.
Yes.
And that...
Because wouldn't it be nice if all of us could do Zazen? I mean, all of us who want to do Zazen.
Who want to do Zazen.
Yeah.
We got ourselves into a corner here.
We so did. We don't know what we're talking about anymore.
But the binary, right, that's like free stuff isn't as good, or you could flip it and be like, in liberal culture, maybe it's better if it's free or you're self-reliant while you're doing your self-care. Mm-hmm. Or there's that binary that we really want to talk about that's like the self-other binary that shows up even in the language, right? Like self-care, you can't be supporting someone else and do self-care.
Right.
It's all about like separating and a kind of indulgence so often in the way that we think about it.
Right.
We are interested in exploding that a little bit and seeing both inside that binary, but also into the real way that we get stuck in thinking about serving other people as something that we have to like go away from in order to serve ourselves.
Right.
In order to take care of ourselves.
Right. I always think of, and I think this is a pretty cliche thing to think of in this regard, but in terms of self-care, like on the, if you ride on an airplane and they're like, put your own mask on instead of someone else before you help someone else.
It's such a good cliche, though. I love that one. Yeah. Because like I actually say to my children in the morning when I'm like making my coffee after I sit, and they're like, toast, toast, toast. My husband and I will both say, you know, I have to put my safety mask on so that I can make your toast.
Mm-hmm.
This is important for both of us.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing about my loving limit to myself is that I'm like, it doesn't look like it, but I'm actually taking care of you by taking care of myself.
Yeah.
That's all part of what's going on right now.
And I'm noticing another dichotomy, which is very much related, maybe even the exact same thing as the self-other, which is what self-care looks like externally versus what it feels like internally.
And this is when we were having the in-person meeting the other night, I was wanting to say again and again around the binary of self-other that so often for me, self-care is like, it really is being with someone that I'm very close to and exchanging connection,
right?
Like really having the... I'm here, I'm listening to you, I'm not implicated in the sense that you can talk about what's going on for you and it doesn't feel risky for me, and then I can talk about what's going on for me and it doesn't feel risky for you, and at the same time we can really learn from each other. That stuff obviously is like, you and I both love that.
Yeah, that's our thing.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing right
that's
now.
That's what we want to like seed the world with, right? At the same time, I feel like there's almost always a little bit, I'm almost always bringing some amount of habitual response to past relationships into those kind of interactions. When I feel really resourced and I'm having an easier time in my life, in the sense of I'm getting enough of what we might name self-care, mm-hmm. right? Like there's just enough, mm-hmm. like I'm getting enough sleep and I'm getting enough processing time mm-hmm. and I'm getting connection to the earth and time to meditate mm-hmm. and the things that are like how I know myself as being safe mm-hmm. and also how I know myself as being in the present moment instead of caught in another time in the past mm-hmm. that I haven't processed yet or that got triggered by something that's hard that's happening to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I feel resourced like that, then I'm much more able, and this is one of those kind of backwards things, to get fed by supporting someone else.
Yeah.
By showing up with somebody else.
Yeah.
When I feel like there's not enough for me and there's a scarcity vibe in my cells from not having quiet, not having the time to make food that makes me feel settled and whole, mm-hmm. Then those kinds of conversations that are normally so feeding for me can be really exhausting.
Yeah.
And that's something that I know, you know, it's like the put your safety mask on yeah. first. That's something that I really noticed having infants. Mm-hmm. When babies are tired, they have a really hard time getting rest.
Yeah.
It's just what they're like. Right. And you're like, what? How could that be? You know, you're exhausted and they can't fall asleep. Mm-hmm. Their nervous systems are just like all their hair is going the wrong way and they can't settle. When we point at things like take a bath, or these like external manifestations, part of what we're talking about is like, how do you get your fur smoothed out?
Yes.
So that you can get the rest you need.
Right.
Because you're at a deficit and your deficit is actually meaning that you're not able to be met. You're not able to receive the support that is available, right? I can't take in the breath that's pressing on my face because I'm so worried about being out of breath.
Right. That's, I think, where the what we've both described as like a feeling of hiding. Mm. That's a clue for me that I've just learned that this feeling of hiding or wanting to run away is an indication that I haven't spent enough time with myself, mm. that I haven't been listening even when I have been spending time, mm. or that there's something that I haven't turned to look at. It's that thing making itself known and in like a desperate way.
Mm-hmm, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is like almost like banging on the door
yeah.
kind of feeling. That's like when you finally listen, right? Just like I was saying about my kids. Like when I finally turn my attention on them, that's the moment when I realize that this person has been trying to get my attention for 20 minutes mm-hmm. with increasingly desperate behaviors. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, something's really bugging me. You know?
Yeah.
Like I'm actually kind of mad at this kid. What's going on? And then you give your attention and you're like, oh, mm-hmm. I've been actively ignoring you mm-hmm. for time.
Yeah. Yeah, and even when I thought I was paying attention to you, mm. it wasn't fully there. Mm-hmm. And
but, like, how rough that right. is. Like, one of the things we talked about the other night, and I talk about with friends all the time, hi, Holly, is, like, how do we turn the wheel faster?
Right.
How do I notice sooner yeah. before I'm, like, at extremis to before use you, like, all of my metaphors? Like, I'm out of breath, or my kid is just yelling and throwing a tantrum, or...
You have to go hide.
Yeah, yeah, you're like fully at the hiding, running away place before I'm like, time for some self-care.
Yeah.
And that means noticing myself
right.
in a tender way.
Mm-hmm. And I think the tenderness is such an important thing mm-hmm. because it's one thing to be like, what do you want? And
which
another
is
thing.
Not really.
Right.
That's then, just like, go away.
Right. And another thing to be like, oh, hi, darling. What's going on with you?
Okay. I'm putting everything down. Mm-hmm. Let's just sit on the floor right here.
And you can trick yourself into thinking.
Oh, yeah. I already looked.
Yeah. I already looked. There's nothing
there. Wasn't anything there.
Nothing
there wasn't
is
anything
bothering
good.
Me. So what's going on here is really different than being like, this thing, this feeling, it keeps just pulling at my sleeve a little bit. And I thought I paid attention, but it's still there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon it's going to rip my whole sweater off. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'd better just like look at the thing that's pulling my sweater off. Mm-hmm. And it can be scary at that point because it feels really big. Mm-hmm. And then it might be like, oh, it's just this little thing that I failed to attend to.
Mm-hmm. And as ever, right, the degree to which our strategies for not noticing ourselves are habituated is part of what makes them so hard to see.
Yes.
That's a place, you know, where I was doing my noticing is that caregiving is such a habituated way for me to not notice myself.
Yeah.
Right?
Let's talk about that for a while because that piece feels really juicy to me. It's something I also really notice for myself is that my stress reaction is often to go find someone else to take care of.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I want to bring up Tada, who does this work that I just am so impressed by and is really a great resource for me. And his website is Selfish Activist. And we'll put that in the show notes and like give him money. I'm going to give him money now that I said his name on this podcast. I try to give him money almost every time I teach about anything that he has to offer.
We'll include a link so you can give him money
too.
Give
him some money. Give him like $2. Make it feel doable, like a doable action.
Yeah.
He wrote this piece where he just as part of like his whole other point, he was talking about the polyvagal theory of the nervous system, which is like really simple and you've probably heard about it. Like maybe even from a yoga teacher. The parasympathetic nervous system, when you're feeling well, lets you rest and digest. And when you don't feel safe, then it freezes. The parasympathetic nervous system freezes. That's why you're not hungry when you're terrified. Mm-hmm. And you can't sleep, right? Even like in grief, right? People tend to have like strong responses around sleep and around food. Mm-hmm. Then you have this other system called the sympathetic nervous system. That's your activation system, right? So sometimes people will portray this like the sympathetic nervous system is all bad because that's the one where we say fight or flight. But there's a safe version of your sympathetic nervous system too that's like when you're really excited about something and you feel safe, right? Like you feel turned on. Or you feel like you're riding your bicycle really fast.
Or you're like a little kid and it's Christmas morning.
Like, oh my God. And you just feel so bright, right? Yeah. Like all the light bulbs are on. And that system is really connected to like arms and legs and heart. And we're just going, right? But like not a lot of decision making happening. When you're not safe, that system makes us run away, right? Or hit someone in the face. Again, arms, heart, lungs, not a lot of decision making going on. Then this is where Tada totally blew my mind because he was like, we're humans in the full polyvagal system. This doesn't get talked about in your average yoga class. We have a social relating nervous system where we are functioning in a nervous system to allow us to be together. That's like limbic nervous system stuff, right? So like right on top of the part of our brain that does those other things, we have this social relating part of our brain that's still really like foundational, fundamental, not prefrontal cortex kind of stuff where we're doing a lot of decision making.
It's making me think of that tree book, The Hidden Lives of Trees, where they're
reading about brains and reading about tree roots is like
their tree roots same, like right? interconnect.
Yes.
So they have community, they have social relationships through their roots.
Right. Chris is reading a book.
I already read it. I'll put it on the show notes.
So in this system, in our social relating system, Tada's like, there's the safe place, and the safe place is connection. When we feel safe, this nervous system allows us to connect with each other. And when we don't feel safe, we do caregiving. And I was like, fell over in my chair. I was like, oh no, that explains everything. And caregiving is such a good term because it's what we do to try to get safe.
Yeah. To try to feel connection.
To try to get back to the place where my fur is going the right way to try to feel connection, right? And just like punching someone in the face or running away or freezing, those tools are there to get us back to a safe place, right?
Right. Right.
And yet, very often, we get stuck in a loop, right? Like, that's what trauma does.
Right.
And we talk in this podcast about trauma as something that is regular, mm-hmm. right? Like, there's the big, big traumas.
We'll probably do a whole episode on trauma.
On trauma, yeah, like, a couple. But there are, like, the things that maybe sometimes we more normally think of as trauma, like mm-hmm. these huge things.
Like a family member dying.
Right, or rape.
Yeah.
Or being in a war.
Yeah.
And then there's the things that sometimes they call small t, mm-hmm. right? Which is like...
Like my story in the grocery store.
Yes.
In the episode one.
In episode one.
Or a microaggression.
Yeah. Or just like the part where you're around other people who have trauma.
Uh-huh.
And you're trying to caregive them. And so you're taking on little bits of their experience just because we are. Maybe even just because you connected to them. Mm-hmm. And I connected to them. And then I took on a little bit of their trauma experience. Mm-hmm. And I walked around with it in my organs and in my nervous system. Mm-hmm. Progressively, right? Like this dog that I'm hanging out with is a traumatized dog. So all the time I'm having to like redirect myself back to my own nervous system. Those are skills. Mm-hmm. And I have skills for that, and I still don't.
Right.
I'm not able to protect myself all the way.
Right.
So with trauma, it can be really easy to get stuck in trying to get safe without noticing that we are safe.
Right.
And that's where we get to something that might feel like you're trying to do self-care, but it actually keeps you stuck.
Right.
Because the moment of noticing didn't happen.
Yeah. And it's also not to say that caregiving is always a symptom of trauma or
Totes.
Having right. yeah. your limbic nervous system activated in a stressful way. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, there's many aspects of caregiving that are also coherently self-care. Mm-hmm. Like you've talked about holding your babies.
Mm. Right.
And that's caregiving and also like grounding and centering. And right. I've had that experience. I don't have babies, but mm-hmm. I've had that experience holding babies or mm-hmm. animals.
Right. Or like I love to cook dinner for my family. Mm-hmm. And that's like really overt. I'm taking care of them. Mm-hmm. I'm taking care of their bodies. But the activity of it for me, not for everyone who cooks dinner for their family, mm-hmm. right? But for me, it gives me a kind of pace and a structure mm-hmm. that allows me to do some processing. It's time that's defended for me, mm-hmm. right? Like there's a loving limit for me that I'm not allowed to do anything else besides that.
And I'm also noticing for cooking, there's lots of senses involved. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because there's the smells, there's the different textures as you're cutting things or sorting with your fingers. There's a lot of ways to feel your body while you're cooking. Mm-hmm. You have to look at the food to see if it's burning or if it needs to be stirred or if it's not quite yet.
And that's so big. I love that you just brought that up, right? Because that's this like fundamental thing that we want to talk about all the time in this podcast. Your body is your big helper.
Yeah.
It's the thing that's going to let you know if you're safe or not.
Right.
It's the thing that, the language is so hard. But like when we go to an embodied place of noticing our physical experience and enjoying our physical experience or really taking in the discomfort mm-hmm. of our physical experience, it's that quality of noticing that brings us into the present moment, right. right? Which is like the ultimate answer to the trauma loop is how do we come to the place where we are?
Right.
Which is safe,
right.
presumably, if we're going to be able to do this work.
Mm-hmm. And it's also another, I think, myth maybe of self-care that we get from reading magazines mm-hmm. or online articles is that it always feels good.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't always feel good. Mm-hmm. It feels really icky and mm-hmm. uncomfortable sometimes mm-hmm. because what we're doing when we're doing self-care is noticing what it's like to be ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it's not always comfortable to notice what it's like to be ourselves. As you were saying, when you were working in the garden, it was uncomfortable to keep having to tell your kids, to back off. Mm-hmm. But that in itself was the act of self-care, was the discomfort of it.
And it really brings me back to the parenting thing, because the loving limits that I very often have to set for my kids, or like have had to set over the years, is to keep them from doing a behavior that helps them squash their noticing of their emotional bodies. Mm-hmm. So like TV watching, or with an infant, it's like sucking. Mm-hmm. I want a nurse is what a baby will tell you. Many babies will tell you, my first child, forever, instead of crying. Mm-hmm. And having like the releasing the emotional stress that she's carrying in her body, and saying no to your child when what they're doing is trying to get comfort is like so difficult.
Yeah.
And easier when they get bigger and you can communicate it about it more clearly. But I really count it as a huge parenting skill in my life to be able to tell the difference between meeting a need and covering up a need,
right,
by supplying a source of habitual comfort.
Right. And that's a thing for me, when I am noticing like, oh, I'm feeling stressed, or these things are going on for me which are making it difficult for me to attend to other things, then often one of my habitual movements is to go to a book. Mm. That's a source of comfort. Mm-hmm. And it can mm-hmm. also be a way for me to not be very present.
In like a physical sense.
In a very physical sense.
Yeah, I think for a lot of us.
And often, this still happens to me, but it happened a lot when I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. I'd get so involved with a book that when someone said, it's time to do the next thing, it would just be like a breakdown. Yeah. And I used to think it was that I had gotten like so involved with whatever the character's emotions were, mm-hmm. that I was sort of playing the character's emotions through me. Mm-hmm. But now I think it's not so much that, it's that I was ignoring these emotions.
Those active repression.
Building up in me. Right. And then my blanket or my book got taken away, mm-hmm. and there they were, still staring at me right in the face. But it's also true, and this goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning, that reading a book can be mm-hmm.
total self-care.
It's a total self-care.
Oh my God, when I just grant myself in my like pretty busy life of taking care of things, when I overtly am like, I get to read a book for an hour right now and not like sneak it in between things, but all the way sit on the couch and just, again, like loving limit, like I'm mm-hmm. not even going to get up. Mm-hmm. I'm only going to sit right now. It feels like 10 hours. Oh, I did that for so long. I'm the most indulgent person. I must love myself so much. I want to bring back something in this little thing, and it's actually from a different podcast that I've been talking about since I got here today, which is called How to Survive the End of the World, with the Brown Sisters. They were talking about this like caregiving thing. And one of them said, I think it was on this podcast, one of them said, caregiving, this way that we're naming caregiving, it's not when you're taking care of someone else. It's when you're trying to take care of their experience.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? It was Renee.
It was
okay,
Renee.
Okay, so another podcast. Renee Sills does a really great astrology podcast called Embodied Astrology, and we'll put that in the show notes. So that's who it was. It was Renee. Renee was talking about trying to take care of someone else's experience. And I was really helped by that distinction, because it's that thing of not really wanting someone else to have their own experience if it feels out of control to you.
Right. Well, my mom has been going through an illness, and that was an immediate thing for me when she started going through the illness, mm-hmm. was how I would take care of her in the illness. And we live pretty far apart, so I couldn't directly be there, although one of the things I kept saying I would do was go be there with her, mm-hmm. and she kept declining. Not in a mean way, just like you don't have to do that way. And another thing that I was doing was sending her a bunch of articles
Other care.
And getting frustrated with her when it didn't seem like she was following the advice in the articles. And at the time, it felt really important. And, like, they weren't bad articles. Yeah. And maybe something could have been different. I don't know. Yeah. But it was a way for me not to address the feelings that I was having.
Your experience.
Yeah. Like, trying to control her experience. Like, don't have that treatment, Mom. Have this one. Mm-hmm. Instead of looking at, I'm scared now.
Yeah. And when we think of, like, how to turn the wheel faster, mm-hmm. like, how do I go from so naturally using my outwardly turned sense organs to try to find the source of my discomfort in the world and then to try to alter it, but especially in the way that we are socialized as women culturally.
Mm-hmm. Away from self-care and toward caring.
Right. I'll make my living conditions more comfortable for myself by trying to make someone else feel the feelings that I want to feel.
Yes.
Which is different than the male socialization, which is like, try to make your environment more comfortable for yourself by changing the environment.
Yeah. So one way to self-care and to investigate this dichotomy that we've been talking about between care for self and care for others mm-hmm. is a Buddhist practice called mm-hmm. metta meditation. Mm-hmm. That's M-E-T-T-A. So I'm going to lead a meditation right now. And the way that metta meditation works is by gathering and noticing a feeling of loving kindness or goodwill.
That tenderness that we were talking about, right?
Yes. For not only yourself, but for all of the beings. It sort of is like a build up from, quote, easiest to most difficult. Although the first one is for yourself, which might be the most difficult sometimes. So this meditation is sort of a conglomeration of a variety of ones that I've heard. But so some of the people to cite them are Dogen, who's a classic Zen master. And I originally heard it from Suniti
Dernovchik.
And Pema Chodron also had an impact. So here's my own that I'm developing on the foundations of others. Life and death are of supreme importance. Time passes quickly, and opportunity is lost. Let us awaken. Awaken. Do not squander your life. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I be safe. May I be whole. May I be free of my ancient and twisted karma. May I be free of all forms of suffering. May my loved one be happy. May my loved one be healthy. May my loved one be safe. May my loved one be whole. May my loved one be free of their ancient and twisted karma. May my loved one be free of all forms of suffering. The next one is a neutral person. So this is someone that you might have slightly positive or slightly negative feelings about, but just not strong feelings about. May this neutral person be happy. May this neutral person be healthy. May this neutral person be safe. May this neutral person be whole. May this neutral person be free of their ancient and twisted karma. May this neutral person be free of all forms of suffering. The last one is someone who's difficult for you. May the difficult person be happy. May the difficult person be healthy. May the difficult person be safe. May the difficult person be whole. May the difficult person be free of their ancient and twisted karma. May the difficult person be free of all forms of suffering. May all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be whole. May all beings be free of their ancient and twisted karma. May all beings be free of all forms of suffering. So when you do this practice, if you want to, you can fill in the names of people. When you pick your friend or loved one, it might be someone that you have some difficulty with, but focus on the beloved feelings. For a neutral person, there's probably no one that you feel entirely neutral about. But the point there isn't that you feel neutral about them, but that you have feelings of goodwill and love toward them. And love is loaded, but feelings of goodwill and kindness toward them. And the difficult person, similarly, could be someone that you do love, but you could focus on the difficult aspects of them. And then all beings. I like to include aliens.
That's so nice. You know, doing that, it brought me back to something that I notice from my own very embodied meditation, because my meditation tends to be really sensory and not really wordy or goal-oriented or even including very much control. Like, there's a loving limit and that's about it. But I can sometimes get a feeling of like spiritually caring for other people,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Instead of emotionally or physically,
yeah,
caring for other people.
And I think this is often what people mean when they talk about prayer, which does not have that feeling,
right,
for
it's
me.
Not resonant for me, but yeah, I agree.
It gives me a sense of being with them in a way that I don't have available.
Mm-hmm. And when people tell me that they'll pray for me, that's where I try to go.
Yeah.
Is that like well wishes that are really spacious.
Right.
Because of the spiritual aspect. When I say spiritual, a big part of what I mean is that there isn't the binary
mm-hmm.
in that realm
mm-hmm.
between you and I. And so my act of caring for you on this spiritual level that's possible is really only possible when I'm caring for me.
Yeah. Yeah, and it, I think, can help develop a space such that when you get to be with the person, the actions that you take around them express that openness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the basing my own self-care, right, on someone else's experience going the way that I think it needs to for me to stay safe. It's like the opposite of putting your mask on first, right?
It's just like fumbling with the masks in general.
Right? Just like, I'm holding all the masks. I have all of them. I have to hand them out.
Right now.
You guys all have to line up so that I can hand them out because I have all the masks.
Yeah. But it's a delusion.
Yeah. Boy, is it. Right? Boy, is it.
There's only the one.
There's only the one mask. And like my hands are only, you know, positioned.
Right. They're only
for mine.
My hands.
Yeah. 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 I wanted to say something explicit connecting the self-care inquiry to our mission to make ethical action more accessible and more personal mm-hmm. and more intimate.
Mm-hmm.
And that self-care piece is so essential because taking care of yourself is not selfish.
Yeah.
Unless we fail to recognize the extreme degree of our interconnectedness.
Yeah. And it's the way that you can respond to the need of others is by recognizing and nourishing your own ability to care for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes I'll say in yoga and in the to make it even simpler, I'll say, just take yourself off somebody else's list.
Yeah. That's a big piece of self-care that we didn't really touch on.
Right? Like,
but when you're caring for yourself, someone else doesn't have to as much.
Yeah. If I'm an apparent me, then that means that all those loving limits that I set are places where I'm not stepping over the line and then blaming someone else.
Right. Because you need care and loving.
Yeah, or they're having to check in with me
right.
and be like, you know, and that's what we do for each other. Right. You know, I think you and I both got to have some moments, some real moments of self-care because the other person was like, are you okay?
Yeah.
And that's what we do for each other.
Right.
Right. But then how satisfying to have to do that for someone else and then have them be like, let me go check.
Yeah. And it was all the way back at the beginning of this podcast. I said something like, we had sort of parallel experiences. And that's what it was, that both of us were like, what's going on with you, buddy?
Yeah.
And we were like, I guess I better go see.
Yeah.
I hope. In a way that I'm hesitant to say. But I hope all our listeners can find opportunities for self-care. All of them.
Yeah.
It's nice to think that this meta practice is something that I could carry with me no matter where I was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that is so much of this practice, right? Is that you already have the tools that you need, all of the resources that we'll list and all of our conversations with each other and all of the different forms that we find for self-care are really helpful according to the degree that they point our attention back to ourselves and give us back to ourselves.
Yeah.
The